Yo, this hot, this the spot, there it is, pod.com. We're interviewing the best comedians, so tune in quick and get your ears receiving them. We talking about life and life to stream right to you, from the microphone right to your home, dude. Side note, this might get embarrassing, but no, don't sweat, yo, cause there it is.
Welcome to the There It Is podcast, the comedy podcast to help you find your inspiration. I'm your host, Jason Farr. Let's do this. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a fun episode for you today. It's almost tax day, so we said let's have a comedian who's in accounting on. So, you know, it's seasonal. It's a seasonal guest. Two big thanks to give to some recent supporters. Thank you so much to Stephen Asifo and Janet McNamara. Janet also sent over a very sweet email. We thoroughly appreciate the support. It helps us keep There It Is going. The podcast, website, and newsletter are all labors of love, but it's not free to host sites and accounts, so support like this helps us do that. If you'd like to support too, head on over to thereitispod.com and click on the support tab. We thank you very much. On to today's guest. As I mentioned, it's a comedian who's also an accountant. It's not only a comedian, but a Canadian comedian, Amy Bug. And yes, she's got the accent. She's very sweet. She's very funny. And we mostly talked about her comedy, but she did actually offer a little advice on what comedians can do when it comes to filing their taxes. It's a fun chat. Let's get right to it. Here's my chat with Amy Bug.
Like a hotel room. You on the road?
Yeah, I'm in LA doing a comedy festival right now.
Oh, very cool. What festival are you doing?
It's new. It's called the Bergamot.
Yes, I'm familiar with it. I believe I've covered that in my festival guide.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I think it's its first year this year.
Yeah, very cool. That's going on. And that you're there for it.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
Good. So you are from Alberta?
Yeah, Calgary.
But you're currently living in Ontario.
Yeah, I've been living in Toronto for like the last 6 years.
Oh, well, nice. And how long have you been doing comedy? When did that start for you?
10 years, so shortly after I graduated university.
Oh, okay. Are you still an accountant or is that something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, so yes.
So you're living this great double world where you have a really solid job. This must also be a busy time period for you. Well, I don't know when tax day is and or how taxes are done in Canada actually at all. So maybe it's not super busy for you right now.
I've intentionally avoided that department tax so that I don't have to deal with that.
good deal. So how did someone who had aspirations to go in accounting also have aspirations to do comedy in a big way like you're doing?
I guess I never really had aspirations to be an accountant. That really
was that the fallback job?
Yeah, basically my parents were very much like, you need a job that makes money. I didn't really know what to do, so mm-hmm. I kind of did that, and then I found comedy and I was like, oh well, this is what I actually want to do.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people, they're, let me keep the lights on job is not as stable as a good accounting job. So you lucked out there. But how are you able to do both as far as like time management is concerned? Because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't get up before 10 a.m.
Yeah, I got very lucky with my job and that I was able to go down to part time. So I only work 4 days a week, which has made it everything like much easier.
I bet.
So that means I can go out on the road from Friday to Sunday. Yeah.
Oh, good deal. And do you do mics during the other days?
Yeah, I still perform. I also work remotely too for half the time. So I can still perform.
That's one of those things the pandemic helped. That probably helped you with. Before, were you able to work remotely before the pandemic?
No.
Yeah. So what was that like, trying to hit up mics while also having to work in office?
Yeah, that's exhausting. Yeah. Because you like come home from work, you get home, you maybe eat, and then you have to go out and do a mic or a show right away.
Yeah.
And doing that like 5 days a week was too much. So I'm happy that I don't have to commute. That helps. And I don't have to work 5 days a week.
Oh, good deal. How did you finagle that? I mean, obviously you didn't finagle the pandemic part.
Yeah.
With the working remotely, but.
How did I? Well, it was kind of like when I moved to Toronto, I started a new job. So it was like a new department. And then everything was really hectic in the beginning. And then when things started to settle down, I was like, hey, you know what? They actually only need me 4 days a week. It's a deal for them. I'll take the pay cut.
Yeah.
And that's how it kind of worked.
Oh, okay, cool. So you started comedy 10 years ago, you mentioned.
Yeah.
And what before you started doing comedy led to that? Like, oh, I've got to do this. Like, what was there a comic you loved and just thought like, oh, I can never do that? Or did you at some point say like, I'm going to just try this open mic?
I think I'd never seen, I went to school, university in Saskatchewan, and I'd never seen live comedy before. Mm-hmm. And then when I saw it for the first time, and it's like these incredible headliners that you don't see on TV, really, or they're not on TV like you would think. Mm-hmm. And they're so good. And you're like, oh, you can do this and like not be famous and just kind of have like a regular life. That really appealed to me.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So then I went and watched a bunch of shows. I tried a few improv classes. And then when I tried stand up for the first time, I was like, oh, I prefer this one.
Oh, okay, cool. So you bring up something about just like having a regular life, but still doing comedy and being good at it. It's there is a middle ground that I don't think people realize exists when it comes to these sort of endeavors. They think it's either a hobby, you're just going to an open mic a couple of nights a week, or you're head down grinding it out with the discipline of Kevin Hart or something like that. And that's not necessarily true. And then there are also people who think like the only way to do well in comedy is to be as big as Kevin Hart. But there's a lot of middle ground. There are people who are living normal lives, but they're also making decent money on the road doing comedy when they are available to go on the road doing comedy. So it there is a balance where people who have a little following, maybe they don't have a household name, but they are still known amongst comedy lovers, who are making money, making a living.
Yeah, I think people, yeah, I didn't know that existed until I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that's super, it's like you kind of have to be, you kind of have to go into comedy to realize that it exists, but you know, it does. Like, it's easy to get mad at those people who, like, you always have a friend or maybe a personal experience where someone's like, oh, you're going into comedy, you'll never make it. And they're thinking like, you'll never be Kevin Hart. And it's like, you don't have to be as big as Kevin Hart to do this. There are plenty of people who are doing well at this in some capacity who are not nearly that big. So, and that's fine. That's good. People should celebrate that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the reality is if like you don't go out and you watch live comedy all the time, you don't realize how many opportunities there are for comedians to get paid like outside of like major media.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you start doing it and like 10 years ago when you started doing it, when did it sort of click for you that you could really make a go for it?
I don't know. I guess my first sets went well and I just really liked it. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm kind of good at this. Especially when I was starting out in Calgary, like people wanted to put me on their shows right away. And I was like, oh, this is like exciting. I'm good at this. Never had that experience before.
You mean no one said, hey, you're good at this accounting thing? Do people ever say that about it? Is that a
chance? Yeah.
That's, I guess it's one of those jobs that you get it and you do it, but it's not the same as comedy where people immediately are taking it. There's not an audience, I guess, for accounting.
No, you just kind of do it and you send it in an email and it's over.
There's no applause break or anything.
I'm like, you, yeah, your email might not even get a response. So,
what kind of material did you love that was coming out of you? Like what sort of voice did you find that you had as a comic?
I think it was only until I went to Just for Laughs to watch, and I saw Maria Bamford.
Oh yeah, she's great.
Yeah, and then I saw that, and I was like, oh, you can do comedy like in all sorts of different ways. And then it's really when I like started like experimenting with that kind of thing, like, okay, like, how do I make this a bit different, that I really started liking it too.
About how soon into your journey did you discover that?
I'd probably say like 2 or probably 3 years in. It's like the first couple of years are you just like getting comfortable on stage and kind of figuring out like
structure and
the structure and the process of just like telling a joke. Like I was like really filthy in my first 3 years.
Really?
Yeah. Like I just, when I was figuring things out, and that's kind of like the comedy I'd seen before, I was like, oh, this is how you do it.
Oh, I get you. So you thought that was what you had to be, but was that like in your day-to-day life when you were making people laugh, or when you were thinking something was funny, was it filthy stuff?
Not usually, like occasionally, but not to the extent that I was doing it on stage, no. Which is why I stopped doing it, because it wasn't like true to myself.
I remember a story Jerry Seinfeld told about why he stopped cursing in his comedy was because there was a joke he would tell, and it would get a tepid response or not so much of a response. And then one time he told it and he had like an F-bomb in there or something, and it got a huge laugh and it made him angry. He was like, wait, this joke could only do this well if I cursed. And it just made him so mad that he was like, how can I get this kind of big laugh without cursing?
Yeah,
that was how he found that sort of avenue. Not that that's necessarily what you're doing. You're not cursing in your comedy, but
no, I definitely throw a couple in there.
Yeah, but you found what was right for your voice and what was natural to you after a couple of years of trying something different.
Yeah,
very cool. Yeah, and you've done a ton of festivals, as you mentioned. You're at a festival right now, but you've also done the CBC Winnipeg Comedy Festival.
Mm-hmm.
You also got a TV credit out of that. So how did that come about?
Well, I auditioned, I think, a couple years. I'd done a festival in Winnipeg that I liked a lot called Odd Block that I think the booker had already seen me at there. I'd do well there.
Mm-hmm.
And they take kind of submissions every year. And then the year they had animals, I had a lot of animal material.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, I was just lucky enough to be chosen via that process.
Okay, cool. With your current setup where you are you always performing at a local club, or do you find that you are traveling a lot on those off days?
I would say it's a bit of both. Like a few times a month, I'm definitely going like outside of Toronto in some way. And then some weekends I am just like at Comedy Bar or other venues around town.
Okay. Have you come through America much?
No, I've done a few festivals in the States,
mm-hmm.
but yeah.
I hear you. When you hit your stride in comedy, what did you feel was clicking for you?
I guess I just wasn't as anxious on stage. I was more comfortable. I still get a lot of like anxiety, especially like pre-show anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, yeah, probably that with the combination of like that 3 years in where I was kind of like figuring out my own voice. And then I started writing jokes that I really liked.
Mm.
And then I think that's kind of where it started to click for me a bit more. Yes.
When you said jokes that you really liked, were you referring to that transition from doing filthier stuff to doing stuff that was more like you?
Yeah. Like writing jokes about wombats as opposed to my butthole or whatever.
So there were no wombat jokes before?
No. It was almost pure filth, I want to say.
When you weren't writing material that was the sort of stuff that you actually liked, did those sort of jokes about topics you actually like come up and you disregarded them, or were you just so focused on writing Filthy that it didn't even come up for you?
Yeah, I think I just had, I didn't really come up. I didn't, for me, it was like, it wasn't until I saw like other comedians and like kind of expanded my knowledge of like comedy and all the different comics. I was like, oh, you can really write jokes about anything, that I started to think about stuff like that.
You really can. And it's cool that you had that experience. So was there ever a situation where you thought like, you know, people don't want this, people want this other kind of thing. And you then had to kind of go, no, people, like, I'm enough. People do want me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think that's, I mean, in some rooms it's, I am not what they want. Yeah, like there's a, I think there is a talent to getting people to laugh at what you like. I think when you're first starting out, a lot of people cover like more universal subjects. Mm-hmm. And then it's, and then it kind of evolves into like what you think is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, as you get more experience, I think it's easier to get that material to work. Whereas when you're first starting out, I think it's really hard.
Yeah.
To get that kind of thing to work.
Yeah. Universal material, everyone sort of gets, but
yeah,
when it's something that's so unique to how you think, there is that trick of trying to get them to understand it from your perspective.
Yeah.
How did you go about getting people to sort of get it a little bit more?
I think it's easier when you like really establish like your point of view or like the kind of person you are, like off the top of your set. Mm-hmm. And some comedians are definitely really good at that. Like, even by the way they say things, that you're like, oh, this is what this kind of person is. And then I think it's easier to kind of embrace their point of view and go along with them for the ride of what they think is fun.
Yeah. They'll find the surprises you can do.
Yeah.
We're talking a lot about comedy, but there was something that I was curious about with your accounting world. Do your coworkers, I assume they know that you do comedy.
Yeah, eventually I always get outed because there's like something in the magazine or I'm in a commercial or something, and then everybody gets excited. Yeah.
So that's not something that you share at work.
Eventually, yeah, it does have to come up, but I do try to keep it quiet, at least for the first little bit. Yeah.
Why is that?
Oh, I just don't want to field so many questions because everybody always has a ton of questions. Yeah.
Yeah. And I get you. There are so many questions. And so often the questions are like so far beyond how things actually go. It's also just helpful to not tell people, because then whenever you're like in a setting, especially an office setting, it seems, where people know you do comedy, then when you're just having a normal conversation with them, then they'll always stop at some point and go like, hey, don't use this in your comedy bit.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that a lot.
Yeah, oh gosh. Yeah, I don't blame you for not telling people. It's like, hey, don't use this in your skits. It's like, I do stand-up comedy, that's not a skit. Okay. What advice would you give the average comedian from the accountant perspective? Because I do feel like a lot comedians could probably use some advice from an accountant about how to save some money in taxes, you know, like what sort of receipts they should be saving when they're on the road. Like, is there anything from you being on the road that you've gone, oh, this is something that I know as an accountant I need to be doing?
Oh, there's a lot of room for improvement in that area, I think, with comedians.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's mainly just like even starting to track your expenses. Because a lot of comedians, I don't think, budget or even like look at what they did last year to kind of figure out, oh, am I going to make more money this year? Am I going to make less money? Like, did I get lucky and have a commercial last year? And just kind of like budgeting and planning and keeping receipts or even filing your taxes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If it's a business like a hotel, they have records about how things went last year and they can sort of guesstimate how things are probably going to go this year. But if they know if they lost some big client or, you know, say there was some big event that used to go on and last year was the last year that event went on. So now there's a lot of business you're going to miss. So you can very easily do that, because it's a business and they're trends. But in the entertainment business, you have no idea what's going to come. You have no idea. You can't anticipate you're going to get more work or the same work that you got last year, because it's just, it's a crapshoot all the time.
Yeah, like you really, I think, have to think about it like very conservatively, or at least I do, because it's like, I don't book a commercial every year. I book a commercial like once every 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think you kind of have to look at, yeah, especially when you've been doing it a bit longer, you can kind of look at like what you've done. Mm-hmm. And then if you get extra money, you know, that's great.
Right. I think one of the big mistakes that people who are in the entertainment business who lose all their money, I feel like the big mistake they make is that they got some huge advance. They put their first album out or whatever, huge money from that. The tour was great. And then they just assume it's going to always be that way. And it's just, you can't assume that. You just cannot assume that. You could be an actor who gets on a TV show and has a season that goes real well. You make a bunch of money. The second season doesn't go as well. Then the show gets canceled. So now you're not making that money, but you bought that house, you know, you bought these cars, assuming you're going to have that kind of money for 10 years. Well, I don't even know if they're putting that much thought into it. I don't think it's like they operate with this notion that they are just going to always get money like that. But it's just not the case. You can't operate that way.
Yeah, I think it's like very much in human nature, even with myself, to be like, oh, as soon as you get money, you want to spend it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult thing to avoid doing. Okay, yeah, we're going to the Keg Mansion now.
So it's just it's a matter of like budgeting, being aware of how much is coming in and saving.
Yeah, I think lots of comics are very spontaneous, so it doesn't really work with their nature that well.
Right.
Think about 3 years ahead and 3 years behind.
Yeah. Now, you know, again, you're in Canada. A lot of listeners are not. A lot of them are in America, so I know the taxing is different. But generally speaking, could you speak to what sort of things people should be keeping track of, like receipts that they should keep and try to utilize when they are filing their taxes?
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know how it works in the States, but in Canada, yeah, like anything to do with your vehicle, you keep your receipts for. Any like watching a show, your Netflix subscriptions, your hair, your makeup, your clothes, like if you get your teeth whitened, like literally anything to do with your appearance or your performance, you could carry it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think about hair and makeup and teeth whitening, but yeah, that does directly relate to your job.
Yeah, like haircuts, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then also the internet. We're auditioning online. We're uploading videos. We have to have the internet for that. I imagine that's something else to keep track of.
Yeah, you can also like write a part of your rent off as like a home office. There's all sorts of stuff to write.
Okay, good things to think about. That mm-hmm. A lot of the comedians listening maybe have not thought about. No shame, but now you know. What's next for you? What do you want to see happening in your career?
I don't know. I am releasing a special on YouTube.
Ooh.
Next weekend. I think it's for Friday the 12th. Yeah, so I hope that people just watch that. That's I put a lot of I produced it all myself, so yeah, using my accounting expertise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Budgeting appropriately and saving.
I used some of my savings to make that happen. So I just, mm-hmm. I guess I really hope that people watch it.
Oh, awesome. So what all went into producing a special yourself to get online?
Oh, it was so much work. It was way more work than I was even expecting. Like I had to find a venue. You have to find someone to film it. You have to find someone to edit it. You need set deck. You need, you know, comedians to open and to host. And then you need a publicist and you need artwork. And then you need someone who can put all this stuff online. And you need hair, you need makeup. Like, every time I got started, the list just kept getting longer and longer. But
yeah,
now I think I have a pretty good idea of everything that's required.
And what's so cool about the time period we live in is that someone can self-produce something, put it on YouTube, and that can be monetized.
Yeah, like, you know, it gets cheaper every year to kind of make these things yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it makes, you know, more comedians accessible to the public.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to kind of wait for a big network or something to happen for your career. You can just do it yourself.
Yeah, I mean, 20 years ago, people who had bands could do that. They didn't have to wait for the music industry. And it was almost kind of built that way, where it was like you had to build your own fan base. But you could, because people could self-release much easier 20 years ago with music than comics could 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can make a name for yourself using the internet and self-releasing your own product.
Yeah, like I've gone to a couple panels that they're having as part of this festival.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, there's a lot of industry at these panels, and they say exactly that. Like, it's very much trending towards comedians creating their own audience through like social media.
It's a great idea. I know things are changing with TikTok, but no, there's still other avenues for you to for basic or building a fan base. And sounds like you're doing it. You're doing the things.
I'm trying.
Did they have you on the panel?
No. They had a lot of people, yeah, way more qualified than me to talk on those panels. So it was really interesting.
Yeah. I know you mentioned, you know, you love the lifestyle that you can have right now. Do you anticipate it changing? Are you trying to get to a place where it's all comedy, or do you like the balance that it is now?
Oh, I would love to get to a place where it's all comedy and I don't have to answer emails anymore.
Yeah, you can pay someone else to answer the email.
Oh, yeah. Even if it's just like, yeah. I guess I would still have to answer emails, but.
We'll never get away from answering emails, unfortunately. Yeah, not even AI can do it for us.
No, it helps. Yeah, it can help a bit. Like, it knows to say thank you, which is polite of it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we've reached the end of the episode. We should create something together.
Okay.
And you know what I'm kind of interested in is either, so here are two options. One is either how someone can find the right balance between work and comedy for them, or how someone can find their voice, because you spoke to that a little bit earlier about how you found your voice after a couple of years of doing stuff that wasn't quite who you were. So how can someone do that for themselves now? Which of those two do you like?
Well, the second one is definitely a much harder question, so I might skip that, because that's like going to be very specific to each person.
True.
And it's just about like watching comedy and finding out what is out there and what speaks to you, and then kind of
being consciously aware of that.
Yeah, and then thinking about, okay, how would I do that then? Like, what's unique to me? Yes.
No, you just answered that one, actually. That's actually a good answer to that. But yeah, so with the first one, like, what are some good tips for having the right balance so you don't lose your mind?
Yeah, I think it is just, especially because comedy can be like so financially unpredictable, it's good to have like a day job that you work, you know, a few days a week, and finding, you know, putting time aside to, I guess, create or gain another skill set, which also, like, you know, helps you think differently with comedy as well.
Right.
Yeah. Like, if it's like accounting or web design or graphic design, just something else that you can do, you know, a few days a week that gets you paid this, so you're not really, really stressing. And, you know, I wish I chose a career, I guess, that had a little more flexibility, because accounting, they kind of just still want you in the office, like at your keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, what is the job with more flexibility? That's the only thing.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people I know that like do graphic design or web design.
Oh,
like, that's already kind of all internet based anyways.
Right.
Yeah.
that makes a lot of sense with graphic design, because that when I first started hearing about that, it was someone who was just kind of working out of a home office.
Yeah, like anything, I think, especially for like newer comics, that it's an industry that is online, I think, mm-hmm. then you can go to different cities and you have a lot more flexibility to travel and kind of go wherever you want, which I think is ultimately like ideal for a comedy career.
Yeah. All right. Well, very cool. There it is. Thanks so much for being on the podcast, Amy.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Yes. I hope you enjoyed that chat, and I hope you get something out of the tax advice she gave. Maybe you can't use all of the advice for this year's taxes, but keep it in mind for next year's tax season. Don't forget, Amy's comedy special comes out this Friday on her YouTube. We have a link to her page in the bio. You can follow her on Twitter at Amy_Bug and on Instagram at AmyBuggy. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at ThereItIsPod, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at ThereItIs. And follow me on Twitter at JasonFarJokes and Instagram at JasonFarPix. Also subscribe to our comedy lifestyle newsletter and support us if you can. We have a Patreon and a PayPal. Go to ThereItIsPod.com for a newsletter and support info. Links in bio. Until next time, be good to each other.
The music for the theme song was created by Neil Brooks. The rap was written and performed by Nick Acevedo. The logo for There It Is was created by Jeff Prater. The There It Is podcast is produced by Jason Farr.